the complete works of William Shakespeare, as told by... Tonight's episode, King Henry VIII, or All Is True. So, my Nelson Doubleday chronological order of the complete works of William Shakespeare, Volume 2, says King Henry VIII, also known at Shakespeare's time as All Is True, was performed at the Globe Theater when the theater burned to the ground in 1613. Some flash paper apparently caught fire and it burned down. The play is believed to be written about 1612 to 1613, and it's the last of the plays in the collection, and I guess marks a return to the histories for Shakespeare. It's also considered only partly his work, with the other part being attributed to a fellow by the name of Fletcher. A lack of unity in form and content apparently underscores the dual authorial theory. But anyway, that's all separate. The narrative opens with the disgrace of Buckingham at the wily political machinations of Cardinal Wolsey. Indeed, in a sort of stay-the-course monologue, Wolsey downplays Queen Catherine's calls for mercy, saying, "We must not stint our necessary actions in the fear to cope malicious censurers." The court intrigues of so many historicals, plays that that Shakespeare wrote before, come into play pretty much throughout King Henry VIII. It's all about sort of the court intrigues and machinations, political maneuvers of various people. This is all the more so as a great part of the play is about King Henry's desire to divorce his long-suffering wife, Queen Catherine, because, he says, she has yet to provide him with a male heir. It may be because he had the hots for Anne Boleyn, but truth be told, it is really about the male heir issue. Anyway, religiously and politically, his desire to divorce is a bit of a pickle. And Catherine, who has done nothing wrong, she's been a good wife, she's, you know... No one really has anything bad to say about her except that she didn't have kids, or didn't have boys. She had daughters. She stands defiant, but respectful of her husband. And Henry, as I said, was won by the beauty of Anne Boleyn, who he describes as the fairest hand I ever touched. Oh, beauty, till now I never knew thee. He meets her at a party that Wolsey throws. Anyway, cutting back to the Buckingham plot, he's gonna lose his head, but not before some killer monologues. My personal favorite is, Buckingham says, "This from a dying man receive is certain. Where you are liberal of your loves and counsels, be sure you be not loose. For those you make friends and give your hearts to, when they once perceive the least rub in your fortunes, fall away like water from ye. Never found again, but where they may to sink thee." I blew the reading, but it's a good line. Anyway. Anne Boleyn, meanwhile, has a scene with an old lady where she laments the plight of Queen Catherine and says she would never want to be queen. And the old lady's saying, "What are you're kidding me, right? That's nuts. You got to bear up. What about being a lady? I mean, you know, what about this? Would you stand being a baroness?" Anne Boleyn says, "No, I you know, it's better to be common and all that sort of thing." She says this pretty much as her personal fortunes are on the rise. She's named some sort of thing by the king showing his favor and a you know, bounty of money to be given to her every year, and it's sort of laying the groundwork for her to be queen, frankly. Anne Boleyn really comes across as naive and certainly the lesser of Queen Catherine, yet somehow in the end we're supposed to be joyful that she has won King Henry's heart, which is why there's that dual nature of the play and the lack of unity. Catherine, at her mock trial, wherein King Henry seeks a divorce, rejects Cardinal Wolsey, because she says, "You shall not be my judge, for it is you who have blown this coal betwixt my lord and me." She really has this great speech about how, you know, how can Wolsey judge me when he's the one who's really orchestrating this whole thing? Wolsey takes offense at these words, and, Catherine storms out of the trial, refusing to be judged by any but the Pope himself. Henry then reveals that it's the male heir thing that really is the issue and why, you know. He then divorces Catherine anyway, despite what everyone else is pretty much saying, and reduces Catherine to Princess Dowager so that Anne Boleyn can be queen. Cardinal Wolsey's political clout is severely damaged, however, when he inadvertently includes his donor list and his plans for assuming the popedom, as well as a letter to the Pope saying, hey, let's not approve this divorce until I'm sure that King Henry is on our side and everything, and sort of is showing his machinations on Rome's side about the divorce as well. But he slips all this stuff amongst the paperwork he gives the king, and for his crimes, Wolsey is stripped of his worldly goods and left out in the political cold. He's got a great state of man speech closing out Act 3, where, you know, this is the state of man, blossoms, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, Act 4 opens with a coronation procession, and there's a lot of these lists of honored entrances and exits throughout the play, and I suppose it really captures the court lifestyle, but meh, you know what I'm saying? I was a fan of the gentleman's take on the procession, though. These are stars indeed, and sometimes falling ones, which I thought was just a great sort of summation of the whole thing. Anyway, Catherine, meanwhile, languishes in Kimbolton, I think. She's sick, and she's dying, and heartbroken, and she's come down with a fever, and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, she takes some small comfort in having outlived the disgraced Cardinal Wolsey, but one of her attendants, convinces her to forgive him and have a clean conscience and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, she's then visited by this procession of spirits, which critics are positive was written by Fletcher, and not Shakespeare. But anyway, Catherine makes her last request to the king, mainly that her daughter be afforded some respect and royalty, and that her servants be treated right. Her last monologue is especially heartbreaking because it's sort of the long-suffering wife cast aside, but who still maintains her dignity, and it's really, really something else, actually. It's really a great, great monologue. Act 5 revolves around the birth of Henry and Anne's daughter, Elizabeth. The political court machine seeks to destroy Cranmer, who's, I think, the Lord Canterbury, with one word dissing him with the terrific line, "You are strangely troublesome." Which I think is a great phrase that I should really incorporate in everyday conversation. King Henry VIII, though, has other plans for his old friend, and when the nobles treat Canterbury so poorly, Henry rebukes them and names the guy Godfather of Elizabeth and says, you really should be working together, and, you know, all that. So he names him Godfather, which is the big thing. The play closes with Cranmer prophesizing that Elizabeth's wonderful reign will come, and there will be future glory for her successors. Which, of course, was the immediate past or even the present for the contemporary audience that Shakespeare was writing for. The epilogue of the play has the speaker delivering the epilogue, seeking applause from the audience. It's a somehow fitting end, not just for the single play, but perhaps for the whole collection, which is what we're at this point. The complete works of William Shakespeare, as told by me, Kevin Hannah.